Welcome to episode 6 of Meet the Brewer, hosted by ourselves here in Mother Mac's Public House in Limerick. And live from Peggy's Parlour, we'd like to welcome online White Street Brewing.
Look, I just want to say thanks to everyone for joining us. Thanks to everyone for buying the beer, and thanks to everyone who bought the cans as well, because we sold quite a lot of cans. And I suppose it's the first time we've done cans as part of Meet the Brewer. And it just is what it is, right? And I think it's gone really well, and it's something we're going to consider for the future. Definitely consider for the future. Okay, so we're going to open it up to Sean and Carla to tell us all about themselves, everything about White Street Brewing, Ballymahan, and I'm also going to say maybe explain that the connection to Limerick, because there's a big Limerick connection here as well.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks. Thanks for the introduction, and hello everybody. Hope you're keeping well.
Yeah, really. Thanks a lot for having us back in. I know it feels like a night out. Put the going out shirt on. First time it got worn in about 14 months.
We were a bit worried now, Sean, to be honest with you. The first day you called in, we were kind of worried to be kicking him out. Was he acting the maggot or coming from Ballymahon, right? It can be.
You finally on CCTV that time. Yeah. We're going big and back to the CCTV.
Well, I'm going to say we couldn't find you on CCTV, but have you changed your look since?
Not. Yeah, I probably have changed look since. Yeah. Some of the hair has fallen out since. Apart from that.
But yeah, okay. Seriously, what's the Limerick connection, lads? Because I know you said that there's a big Limerick connection.
Well, Carla was living there, so.
Yeah, so I lived in Limerick for a few years. And like Sean would have been down regularly.
I was down every weekend.
So we were reminiscing today about the crack in the Limerick nightlife. Like, Jesus, you know, you guys, some great boozers. We miss it. Like, I mean, yeah. And like, I kind of left her in 2016. So I think I was asking you that we were open around 2015. Yeah. So it was kind of the beginning. I remember James particularly. I think it was more James that I've met a couple of times behind the bar. We were chatting to James, but, yeah, that's the connection. Yeah, so we're living in town and just out every three hours we were out.
Yeah, the Blind Pig was closing and we needed somewhere new to go.
That's when we kind of.
And you boys had craft beer, so that's how we ended up in your place.
Turn right down the hill.
Did you meet in Limerick? Did you fall in love in Limerick?
Yeah, we started going out together when Carla was living in Limerick, so.
Yeah, kind of. Let's say that's the moment. That's where it started.
So this is okay. We're going to call it a Limerick love story. Sorry,
I was not best man, but one of the groomsmen for one of my best friends who was getting married as well. And at the time, I brought him down to Limerick for the stag. Nobody who goes to Limerick on a stag do as well. Like, so, we brought the lads. We brought Ballymahon and Lamford down to Limerick. The lads, I'm bringing you into some class fucking pubs when we're down here.
And we put it on the map, like, I mean, it was always, yeah, sure, we're a great advocate for it, like, I mean, yeah. It was a great time, I really sort of enjoyed my time down here.
And then you moved back to Ballymahon and decided to open a brewery together.
That's right.
Carla moved to UCD from UL, so she was kind of in between Ballymahon and Dublin as well. But in the meantime, we had the plans. We would have been hatching plans for the brewery when we were sitting in your pub 5 years ago.
Good.
We weren't shifting and stealing glimmers down there. We were kind of writing business plans.
Behaving like, you know, daytime clients or, yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay. Yeah, we'll be editing that part out of the podcast.
Funny shifting.
Yeah. But okay, seriously, right? On a really good serious note, right? So you've mentioned, like, we've some fantastic beers. I've the Berliner, the peach, absolutely gorgeous, right? When did the brewery open? How did it start, I suppose, Sean? And how did you get a love for brewing, really?
Yeah, the brewery is open 2 years at this stage. And earlier on today, I opened the first beer that we brewed probably exactly 2 years ago today, just to see how it's getting on. It's getting on fairly well. It's the Brett Saison. But I started as a home brewer, so I was probably home brewing about 5, 6, 7 years before that. And then I seen myself opening a brewery, but I never saw myself having the money to open a brewery or the whole financial side that's in behind it as well. And then kind of it all came together when I was let go from the job that I was in at the time for about 15 years. So, but in fairness, we had a lot of the stuff bought, and we had it planned, and we were digging floors, and we had the premises. And, but
it's actually interesting, because you're the second brewer to mention. Well, I know you didn't say redundancy, but with the guys on from Lyman, they said basically said it was redundancy, yeah. And the redundancy money was pumped back into the brewery,
yeah.
Pumped in to create a brewery, because it was what they wanted to do and what they loved.
Creating more hardship for themselves with the redundancy money.
I think it's a common theme. Yeah.
Their words, yeah.
It's a common theme across.
I know Mark as well. Mark is a good lad.
But okay, so you opened the brewery. You opened the brewery two years ago.
2 years ago, yeah.
Why? Okay, and I'm going to ask, like, because. Right, we've been doing a bit of digging, right? We've been going through the CCTV and we've been asking some questions and whatever.
Finally, right? Shifting or stealing.
Yeah, and I suppose, but why the love for mixed fermentation and sours? Why?
Yeah.
Because it's a difficult thing to do, and a lot of brewers are afraid of it.
Yeah, I'd say if we just call everything an IPA, it'll sell a hell of a lot quicker. Sour IPA or Saison IPA or whatever, but... No, that's they're the styles I love, and they're the styles I want to make, and I'm passionate about them. So I want to make sure that everybody else is as passionate about them as I am.
Good man. I'm going to ask her, because it's very easy to get it wrong, right?
Yeah.
And especially these styles of beers, right? So you've got to have some unique setup. So unique setup? Like, and I mean, I'm going to ask you a really technical question next, right? Because we know a guy, right, and he was talking about Yorkshire Squares versus Cool Ships, and you know, maybe go into a bit of that, because I think that's, like, there's not a lot of that in this country. I think maybe you're probably one of three, maybe, brewers.
I'd say one of two at the minute. Maybe Otter Bank has as well, but I've been taking a lot of advice from Tom at Land and Labour.
Yeah.
We designed our own Cool Ship. We didn't design it. We took a 2,000-litre milk tank and made it a 1,000-liter milk tank by shaving the top clean off it.
Maybe for the benefit of everyone on the call, right? Because they're like, okay, we've done a little bit of research, right? So we, what is a Cool Ship? What is it? What is a Yorkshire Square? What does it do for you in terms of the brewing?
Yeah,
why does it make this unique?
What we were trying to do with Cool Ship is trying to harvest the yeast from our local environment to create the beer that's gone into the barrels that we put it in. So basically what we're doing is we're creating a totally unique beer. And you can create totally unique beers by either using malt or using yeast or using hops or whatever. But the way we're heading is through yeast. So we need our own yeast from our own town, from Longford, Ballymahon yeast.
Yeah.
So the 1,000 liters of beer goes into the Cool Chip, which is... it's like a flatbed of wort. Rather than putting it straight into the fermenter and adding yeast to it, you leave it open so it can gather up as much yeast as possible and let it cool overnight. It goes from 100 degrees down to 22 degrees in winter with our one. And you're hopefully taking in the yeast from the local environment, and that's going to kick off the fermentation. And it's yeast that nobody else has ever used, and that creates your unique sour profile, hopefully.
And just like on that point, then how do you get uniformity and consistency across the batches? Because that has to be really difficult. If you're just like, I don't know, I'm not trying to be simplistic by saying that you open the doors and let it all in, right? But if you're like that yeast could change from day to day, week to week, month to month, potentially.
Well, it's in now, so it's going to be yeast that has never made beer before as well, so it needs to kind of learn how to make beer. So it's going to be a little bit slower to kick off. It might take a few months. You need to kind of take precautions and lower the pH and get it into a safe zone where it's not going to be harmful to people by the time they're drinking it. So, or even turn into something that we don't want. So we took initial precautions, and hopefully the wild yeast in the local area is going to turn it into something that we need.
But just again, back to because I know, right? Land and Labour, yes, 100% yourselves. I thought, and I wasn't sure whether Otter Bank had one, but
Kinnegar actually have one as well, no?
Yeah, that's right. And their funk farm, they spoke about it. But what
they turned their original brew house into the kind of fun farm with Britannomyces and Kulja, which is good to see that the more it is, the more of these beers that are being made by as many brewers as possible, and the more it gets into people's head, I think the better as well.
When guys and girls are talking about Yorkshire Squares versus Cool Chips, are they the same thing, or is it different? Or
Yorkshire Squares are, it's, I'm not totally clued up on them. So
I'm not trying to catch you out. Sorry, no, it just came up as we were kind of looking into it, like it just came up kind of in terms of.
I had to study them when I was doing my learning process to be a brewer, but it's kind of an old English tradition, isn't it?
It is. It's very much an old English tradition. Yeah. You know, and it's kind of interesting because we just as we were eating pizza before everyone joined, we were having a bit of conversation. And we were talking about terroir, you know, and how that's kind of like Carla's telling us that she's big into the wine and she loves a good glass of wine. And we're talking about terroir and how it's coming into whiskey, and then how it was coming into beer, right? Because, you know, and we were able to kind of talk about a couple of breweries that are either growing their own hops or malt, or, you know, and you made a very good point about the yeast. So I mean, yeah.
People forget about yeast.
Yeah, we do.
It's the yeast that makes the beer. And I mean, you can put the same malt bill and the same hops bill and the same water bill together with four different yeasts, and then you get four different beers. It's actually the yeast that makes the beer. And I'm really passionate about yeast. And we're kind of a yeast-forward brewery. And that's what we kind of focus on, the Brettanomyces and some of the wilder stuff too. Like, so yeast is really important, and you need to... It needs more focus.
So just Carla, because I know you said you were kind of more wine orientated before you had a brewery, and now that you've got a brewery, obviously you're loving the beers and the beers are delicious and all that good stuff. But from a terroir perspective, or just from a, you know, what do you think in terms of the beer? What makes it unique?
Yeah, for us it was really important that element when we kind of started brewery and we were writing business plan. We really incorporated that without so much knowing how we were going to go about it, but it was something quite important. And like, we're always kind of trying to harvest, Sean mentioned it earlier, but before we started the event, we were always trying to harvest wild yeast from the local area. And that's quite a kind of a trial and error. We have the yeast bank, we home brewed with it, we haven't brewed it on a large scale. But yeah, I think it's really important because, as you said, so I grew up in France, and I come kind of in my family, there's a good bit of wine tradition. So that was always kind of ingrained in me that, you know, whatever what you produce, and I really wanted to be kind of very much focused around farmhouse ale, saison. That's the style we wanted to push. I know, you know, we have the IPA as well. Like, why not? But
the IPA is important because when people come in to buy IPA off me, I'll always show them a can of Saison, and then maybe the next time they come back, they'll buy a case of Saison.
Yeah. Because we had that conversation, I suppose, before we started. It is sometimes difficult to sell mixed fermentation.
Oh, big time, yeah.
Sours, Saisons, you know, because there's sometimes, I won't say a misconception, but... You know, people are a little bit afraid of it.
Yeah.
Because it can be so variable.
I think they're more comfortable with something that says IPA on it as well. So.
Yeah, go ahead, Carla.
I think it's going to go for, like, I know it's going to go full circle. It's just a matter of time. So what we're doing here is just going to get it out there. People are trying it. I already see it, even though 2 years ago, before, when we started, how, you know, it was a hard enough-ish sell. Now, you know, you see much more of the style. People have experimented with Belgian style stuff. So maybe I think, I don't know if we keep doing what we're doing and other breweries are doing it well and like, you know, dishing out kind of different, not your traditional style. You know, right. We're getting there. People will go full circle. I mean, we all started loving hoppy beers. I'm the first one, like, you know,
I love
West Coast IPA. Yeah, that's like what I crave, a beer. I crave a West Coast IPA, but like...
Variety is the spice of life.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then, okay, so you kicked it all off 2 years ago. You set the brewery up. You know, I suppose give us a like we can't go and see the brewery right now, but kind of give us an overview of what it looks like, or what's, because by the sounds of it, you've made some of this yourselves. You said you took a milk tank to help to make the I'm not going to call it your cool spirit. Ship. I'm going to call it your cool ship, right? You make your cool ship. What else? What else have you done?
Square, isn't it? No. Yeah, I think it was maybe 2019, this Christmas just after we started up. A good friend of ours that lives in Ballymahon, he invited. I said to him, "Look, call around." It was a cold night in December, and I said, "Sure, look, call in, and we'll have a couple of pints." Back when people could sit down and have a couple of pints, and your man came in and he brought his brother, and his brother is a dairy farmer, but he was after scaling up his dairy farm. So he said, "Jesus, I have a 2,000-liter tank sitting in the yard that hasn't been used for the last 2 or 3 years." So I was, giving him the side eyeball. He said, "Look, if you need it, I'll drop it into you." But that was 2019, and it's only 3 months ago that we actually got it in and got to work on it and tore it apart, ripped the head off it. And it's a tank within a tank, and turned it into a cool ship.
Now, what about the brewery? Like, do you want to say a bit about the capacity and say the tanks in themselves? Like, what we're...
Yeah, tanks-wise, we're a 1,000-liter brewery, and we have 4 regular fermenters that we were using now for the core range. We started off with Brettanomyces saison and Brett Pale Ales, and Brett Pale... 2 Brett Pale Ales, 2 Brett Saisons. But now it's the kind of... The stainless steel has become the core range stuff for Monksland, and like our Belgian Stout and our House Saison and
Mipples.
Cashmere is just getting brewed left, right, and center because everybody loves an IPA, no?
Yeah. it's funny because you mentioned Mark from Lyman, and Mark kind of said he started out he was into kind of dark beers, right?
Yeah.
Started out with an idea in his head of what he wanted to brew and for himself. And he said, probably one of the quickest learnings he had was, I've got to stop brewing beer for myself. Yeah. And I have to kind of brew it for the market.
So yeah, I think you still need to brew the beer for yourself, but also you can't, the tail is wagging the dog for every brewery in this country. And IPA is the tail. But people need to stop drinking IPA and start exploring the other stuff. I say that in every Zoom call I'm ever on. It's the one thing I always say.
Yeah,
explore other shit than IPA. It says me that makes an IPA.
Yeah, because what came first? So did the cashmere come first, or did the
cashmere out? Cashmere for our local pub. The local lad, Pat and Skellies, he said, "Look, if you could do me an IPA, that'd be deadly." So we brewed him an IPA. I did him 60 liters, just 2 kegs, and we're gone in like 2 days.
Yeah.
So I said, "Yeah, we need to scale this up." So we scaled it up, and then COVID happened, and then I had a load of kegs of fucking cashmere, and there was no pubs open. And
I think our core range came about at around COVID, like, because we realized, okay, obviously, you have to keep the lights on, and it was kind of a good. There were beers we could turn around quite quickly. Yeah. Brettanomyces beer, mixed fermentation beer, they need to be fermented much longer. They need time to mature. They need time we can condition, so they need a bit of time in can. So it wasn't as fast of a process as we thought. So that was good way. And I think with the core range, the idea, particularly with the house season one, it is priced at a really sort of entry price point, is because we wanted people to try it out. It was kind of this gateway beer. Try it out, you like it, same with the IPA, I suppose. You like what you read, what we brew, you might try something else. I don't know, we just kind of tried it, and I think, okay, as we said, people try those beers, come in and try the most innovative stuff. I mean, it's true, you can't just have specials. And initially we just started with that. We were doing specials and mixed fermentation left, right, and center. And maybe
my whole opens a brewery and just starts with Brettanomyces saisons and Brettanomyces pale ales.
But I'm gonna say, Sean,
kind of business. Who drew up that business plan?
Yeah, but it probably take COVID out of the equation, right? And there's probably 15, 20, maybe 25 decent craft beer pubs throughout the country, right? Who would take that beer? Who would take it on, and who would try it, right? And who would foster it as their own and look after it and sell it, and they would have a customer base within there that would go for it, right? That wouldn't be afraid of it, right? Pre-COVID, you know, I can understand why you might want to do it, right? Especially with a 1,000-liter system, it makes sense, right? That you'd be able to facilitate the bars, and obviously, look, we are where we are, right? And I mean, probably, I'm going to ask just a question. You can answer it or not, how did your canner? Because I presume you had to get someone into can. How did they feel about working with mixed fermentation? Because sometimes they get a bit.
The beauty of that is we are our own canners. We have our own canning system. So.
There, you never mentioned that.
It actually says it on the label of every can.
Oh, Jesus, swear.
It says canned at White Street Brewing Company by White Street Brewing Company. We have our own canning system.
Ah, good man. Yeah, because that... Yeah.
See, every lid that goes on to every can is fucking sealed by me. It's pure hardship.
It's all manual.
That's why I want to get back to filling kegs, not cans.
Let's not call it hardship.
Two lads fill the cans, and I put the lids on.
How many? Go on. How many cans are you doing a week? Go on. How many cans are you canning a week?
It'll be off. Yeah, it varies. Depends on how much I keg off each batch, but there'll be 1,500 maximum cans, like all done
in one day.
All done individually by me with the lid put on and the thing sealed on.
Good man.
You don't have a machine. I am the machine.
You are the machine. Oh.
So, again, when we started off, we knew this, obviously, because we know the canning lads quite well. They're only up the road from us. So we knew this. Again, it was something we had to factor in, that nobody would go near us, like canning and experimentation. So we had to find like an alternative. And I think the process worked well. All, as we said, all are like fermented in the can.
Yeah, we did like 5 years. Five years.
The can looks beautiful.
Thanks.
That's actually that label was designed by, he does the Doctor Who stuff, Dom Cooper. He's a good friend of my brother's. He's in a band with him. And he said he'll do us a free twist. I think he's a famous designer. He's living up in San Diego.
Oh,
he
said, wow.
I'll do you a free twist on this one.
I know. We do our best trying to get a...
I was talking about it even in general. The lid is on, it's there. It's the beer
tastes
exceptionally good. Yeah, I mean it's a good, you've done a good job canning us.
Thanks, yeah.
You know, but okay. So
it's a different filling process for us too. Like, so you know, some breweries kind of re-ferment in the bottle. We re-ferment in the can, but it's the same thing, Max. There's gonna be a bit of yeast at the bottom of it, but
yeah.
You pour it carefully, like we say on the label, then you don't have to worry about the yeast on the bar.
And we saw on social media this week, you were filling barrels.
Yeah.
Maybe tell us, because I'm going to say something before you answer it. A lot of breweries will scream and shout about their barrel aging process, and they'll scream and shout about it. But that just seems to be kind of part of it day one. There seems to be barrels, and that seems to be part of what you're doing from day one. It's not an add-on, or it's not an extra.
It took us a while to get going. Like, we were kind of with the mixed fermentation stuff. Initially, we were doing it in stainless steel, and we should have had a massive wood program to put all the beer in. But it's only kind of really since January, we doubled our fermentation capacity over the last 3 months, and we've been keeping the head down. We didn't have any new releases or anything, or we weren't making fresh beers that were available to everyone. So we were brewing beers that were going straight into wood. So we brewed a 13% came up a little bit stronger than we thought it was going to be. Stout. We were taking advice from Tom from Galway Bay, and he was, you know, the lads that make the really good
200 fathoms.
I was saying to him, I'm going to mash it in this way. He was saying, no, you're looking at this all wrong. This is the way you have to mash it in. So I was like, so I have to buy like 20 times the amount of malt that I usually use. But he was a great help. And in fairness, it came out really well, and it only went into barrels there last week in the bourbon barrels. So that should be out for next Christmas. So I think we're kind of shifting a little bit. The core range is going to stay in cans, and anything that we put into barrels is going to shift into bottles. We'll probably go back to that.
Maybe tell us what is the core range, just so we know.
Yeah, the House Saison, the Cashmere IPA, the Monksland Stout, and Mill Pils. Mill Pils is only back. Mill Pils, as soon as we make it, is gone, and it takes a long time to make too. It's like a Brett beer, but it's a Pilsner, like, so it takes time.
And can I ask, Rick, because the Belgian Stout.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about that one. Was it 6.6%?
Get you the Belgian Stout.
No, it's not. No.
No.
5 points something. 5.2 or 3.
Well, maybe we're thinking of the wrong one, are we?
Yeah. You know?
Monksland?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Maybe okay. We're reading the wrong notes. So we're
reading too many. The idea behind the Monksland was never seen too many Belgian stouts.
No.
And I was trying to do a bit of research, and I was trying to put a Belgian twist on a stout, and I couldn't find any out there. So I kind of had to design my own Belgian stout. Okay, head in the Atlas. Come on.
Initially, we released it for Christmas. We thought, you know, it was kind of a nice addition, winter. Just kind of a nice winter stout.
Yeah, used the kind of, I wouldn't call it a traditional stout recipe either. We use 5 different Belgian malts in it and Belgian yeast, but it's just still a little bit of roast malt in there to give it a roast kick, but it's predominantly chocolate malt that you're getting the...
And the yeast, what about the yeast?
Yeah, the yeast is a Trappist ale yeast that the monks use for making their beer, so...
Sorry, Owen Nocton is saying he's only finding out there was a stout. No, there was one in can. As part of the triple that the lads had done. I'm going to open it. I'm going to say, Owen, right, we have none left. It's all for us. If you haven't gotten it, you're not going to get it now. I'm only joking. We have some. We got some extra because we actually got some extras because we knew it was going to go so well, right?
Hey, guys, if you love it, we'll bring down more, you know, no issue.
So tell us, I suppose, right, what makes it other, like what makes it uniquely what it is? Like, I know we've said that the yeast is it just solely the yeast that makes it a Belgian stout, or
I'm a firm believer in yeast decides what the end style of the beer is. I could have used the US05 or some American ale yeast or something, and it would have turned out like some other normal stout. I think the yeast adds some of the extra flavors to it, so. And it's all Belgian malt as well.
And just because it's an ale yeast, it'll ferment differently to what we'd normally expect, wouldn't it?
Depending on your fermentation temperatures and stuff, like, it's every different yeast strain has its own characteristics. So I don't know, I kind of analyze the yeast more so than the malt when I'm designing a beer. I start from the yeast and then work back.
You're actually probably from for us, right? Because we've done not just in this series in terms of virtually meeting the brewers. We've done quite a lot of meet the brewers in the past, right? And you're probably the first brewer to discuss yeast as much as you have, right? Realistically, right? Because everything keeps coming back to the yeast, right? So I'm going to ask you must, right? Okay, you must have a yeast R&D section that you're because I know you've said you're already harvesting yeast from all around Ballymahon, and you're looking at it, right, and you're selecting the ones to use. You know,
we have a microscope in the brewery as well, and we kind of analyze all the yeast strains, and we can see where the Brettanomyces. We can look at each individual yeast strain and the cells through the microscope and see what's in before we ferment as well, like so.
In the next 5 years in White Street, right? Because obviously, whatever way you grow it, I would assume yeast is going to have a big part of it, right? What do you think is going to be next for the yeast? What's going to be the next big breakthrough for yeast?
Big breakthrough for yeast?
For yeast, for For ye. Yeah. What are you going to do with it?
For ye or yeast?
For White Street, for yeast, for White Street Brewery. What are you? What's going to be next big breakthrough? Or
what we're kind of focusing on is the barrel age program, and we're doubling and hopefully tripling and quadrupling the amount of beer that we're putting into barrels. I'd love to have no stainless steel in the brewery whatsoever, but I need to brew in it. I'd like everything to be in wood and just kind of transfer everything from there into bottles. And yeah, we need the core range in cans and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to more cold ship beers. Ideally, you know, the cold ship beer, next year we'll only have the first year version of it. But in 3 years' time, 4 years' time, hopefully we'll have the 3 year blend and then perpetual blends of that going on forever. Like, so we'll have our own kind of version of Alambic, basically.
So I'm gonna ask two questions on it, right? If I was to buy a cool ship beer now, right, what's probably one of the most prevalent or popular cool ship beers out there?
Irish ones, Land and Labour is the only one.
Well, even outside, is it Steam Anchor Steam is coming to mind? Is this are they do cool ship beers?
No, I'd be heading more kind of Belgian side, to be honest.
Okay.
So any Gooseboon, Cantillon, Mariage Parfait. But I think California Common, the one Anchor Steam you're thinking about, is more the process, how they kind of harvest a bit of steam from their local area. So it's kind of a nice, interesting process too.
That's another thing, if you don't mind saying. We're like, the cool chip is not just something that we're going to use for making cool chip beers in. I'm going to use it as a kind of a hop back for wet hops, using leaf hops and dry hop, and kind of a whirlpool type situation between the kettle and the fermenter as well. So it's going to be a full-time, it's big and it's bulky, but it's going to be used all year round for every beer.
Yeah, I suppose I'm kind of thinking, right, like, and we've a local brewer here by the name of Mr. Steve Kinnean, Treaty City Brewing. Right, he built a brewery kind of out of X kind of,
yeah,
I'm almost going to say X milk equipment, similar to yourself, right? And I think if we were to talk to him right now, if we were to bring him on right now, and we were to say what was something that you won't do ever again, right? He'd say, I'm not going to make my own equipment ever again.
Say, if you were to bring him on now, nobody else would get a word in edgeways. I was on a couple of chats with him.
No, be careful. No, he's a lot of fans on that.
Yeah, he's not logged in, is he?
he's a lovely.
No, he's a good guy.
Treaty City, right? Yeah, it's Treaty. Yeah.
Okay. So what? I suppose, you know, we've kind of gone through the brewery a little bit. We've gone through the why you've brewed. You know, we've touched on the core beers that you have. Let's maybe talk about the sour beer that we poured this weekend, right? Because it went down really, really well, right? And it got some really, really high praise. Maybe just tell us a little bit about it. And I'm going to leave you discuss the praise because I think it's only fair. So a good friend of ours, Sarah Downs, gave it some very, very high praise.
Down to earth? Yeah.
I think we brewed it nearly 2 years ago, so I don't even know how to describe it. I've none of it left in Canada.
We have a bit.
We have a can.
Yeah. Okay, I'll open a can. Well, thank you. You can talk about it.
It was brewed, it was barrel aged, it was
no barrels. No barrels. Everything we did up until, I'd say, January of this year, everything was in stainless. So we were kind of tying ourselves up by leaving stuff in stainless and aging it for 9 to 10 months and 12 months, and then re-aging it back in a can. And then you're tied by the can itself is only rated for 12 months, even though it can be all right for fucking 24 months, 3 years, 4 years. Can is not a butter, but
so I suppose I was saying earlier, it kind of was almost like I don't want to do a whole cold comparison between it, but it was almost like a Kiev cider, you know. And Cyril had compared it with a Sidra, you know. And
I was happy to see that comparison too, because I love
But maybe explain why he would say something like that. Why it's such high praise?
Yeah, the way it's fermented, I think most breweries, they don't want live lactobacillus and Brettanomyces in their brew house. But we are predominantly Brettanomyces lactobacillus, so we want to try and make the most complex sour as possible. We don't make kettle sour beers and turn them around in 2 weeks. Yeah, I think that's so, where the complexity comes from.
So to explain it maybe a bit more, it's aged, it's just aged in stainless steel. Obviously, ideally it would have been aged maybe in wood, but like say this was aged in 6 months in stainless steel before we packaged it. And obviously since then as well, you know, kind of longer. But maybe you want to explain the difference between kettle souring and aging.
No. Yeah, well, aging it is a hell of a lot more complex than kettle souring. But obviously, I get kettle souring, so I frown upon most sours that are kettle soured. You can see the difference, I think. Hopefully people can see the difference between a kettle sour and something that's been left for 2 or 3 years with the yeast that gives it its complexity.
So this is where you can make like similarities with, you know, just with wine. Like simply time has given it its complexity. Just let the yeast work and actually different flavor profile develop after a while. So like, you know, after 6 months, Brettanomyces develop a different flavor profile. First 6 months, you know, it's just those fruity flavors. After 6 months, you get this barnyard blanket, horse blanket taste. I know it's not the most exciting description, but you know, you really get that old.
It is, if you like that shit.
Yeah, I generally think this is a sort of nice, yeah, it just, you know, it pours a bit like cider.
Good clarity on the
fruit. Fruity, the fruitiness of it is.
This is the last two cans ever in existence.
Yeah.
And you cracked them open just for us, my goodness. Yeah.
So you never had it off the keg.
Yeah, it's delicious off the keg, right? We've quite a number of people actually drinking it, you know, and as I said, the feedback thus far has been exceptionally good for it, you know, and for both the cashmere and the sour, right? So I mean, you know, they've both been received very, very well, and even
we were lucky enough with some of the beers that we were aging. We were kind of lucky enough as well that we had them in kegs when pubs closed. We're like, I looked at my keg stash and I was like, okay, I have a lot of sour beer and kegs, but they'll keep.
Yeah. And can I just say thanks for the people who bought the sour, actually, and I hope you're enjoying it as much as we are this evening. Look, it's not your obvious choice, but cheers, guys. Hope you're enjoying the beers.
I'm going to say it's probably a little bit more difficult to try and upsell a sour in this kind of scenario in terms of growlers, right? Because if we were in the bar setting, we could actually give people a sample. You know, you'd say try it.
Yeah.
You know, and you'd be very, very surprised how many people would be more open to it after tasting it. You know, whereas obviously, for numerous reasons, i.e. the pandemic and transfer and health, and we can't be handing out samples, as well as legal reasons, we can't hand out samples out through the hatch.
Yeah.
So it just it makes selling this style of beer very difficult.
And I think
you've done very well, like in the uptake that's been there, and I think it's a testament.
But Mike, it's a testament to you too, because you're actually pioneering this kind of stuff, and look at you kind of giving it a chance. No, you know, not everybody would want to give it a chance, and you gave it a try, and you trusted your punters, and here they are, you know.
Listen, come here. When we spoke on the phone, right, and I you have a very trusting voice. I said, you know what, you're gonna make good beer. You're telling me you're making good beer. I trust you. So we said there'd be no issue.
It's kind of a Limerick accent there.
There's a little bit coming through.
Sometimes it comes out.
So there's a comment coming through saying they don't normally like sours, right? But it's really, really nice and very light, right? And I think I just want to touch back to what Sean had said, right? So when we think of sours, a lot of the sours that have been produced at the moment are kettle sours, right? So as in they are soured during the production, during the fermentation of it, just after it, and then they're kegged or canned within a number of weeks, right? Whereas the sours that he's producing are very much like the Belgian style. They're put to, and very much like a kieved cider. It's put to one side. The sugars that are inside the liquid are allowed to ferment, turn into the alcohol, and then the different bacteria's in there, or the different yeast, sorry, in there are allowed to get a bit funky. Right,
and I think that's probably bacteria,
I think that's the bacteria gets a bit funky in there, right? And everything you know, it's a little bit drier. You know, it's, I suppose, I'm going to say it's a little bit more flavorsome and there's more layers.
Yeah.
That makes sense, right? I think that's what people get, because sometimes with the kettle sours, there's a heaviness to it because it's, I don't want to say artificial, right? Because artificial isn't the right word.
I use the word artificial.
Yeah, I know, and you used it earlier on, right? That's where I got
that's
it.
Just
right?
Me.
but it's a heavier sour because the sour is almost put onto it. Whereas with the beer that you have, the sour is generated from it.
Yeah, they're not gateway sours.
Yeah,
kettle
correct.
Sours are probably
but I'm also going to say, right, that the style that you're using, right, it's been around a long, long time, right? The techniques are a long, long time, right? So the same
with the cold ship they're ancient techniques of making sours. So.
Yeah, and there's been many, many breweries before you, and we can just look at the Belgian breweries, right, who have been doing this for quite a long time, right? And you know, it's we kind of associate beers with a certain standard anyway. You know, and it's kind of bred into us, right? Because you how often would you get a bad Belgian beer?
Never.
I don't think I've ever had one, huh?
Yeah, right. And that's kind of my point, right? Because we've all had bad beers, but I think the style and the way that it's brewed.
Yeah, people are forgetting about the Belgian style of brewing. Like people want to. And I've seen discussions on brewery owner discussion boards. They're saying, "What do I call this kind of pale ale? Just call it an IPA, Belgian IPA. If you're making a saison." That shit can't be happening. Saison beer style is not leaving this planet as long as I'm alive. We're not going to start calling them Belgian 98. Saison is here to stay.
Well, it's kind of stood the test of time.
But it's getting forced out by IPA.
Yeah. Back at this again.
I know, we need to discuss these things.
But I think you touched on something really interesting. It was, for me, it was always important to... In one way, I kind of want it to be close to traditional brewing method and maybe sort of very manual. You know, like our tanks are not sophisticated in any particular way. You know, they're kind of repurposed tanks.
Yeah, we can't push buttons. They are actually all repurposed wine tanks. I came from France and they were sent to the UK to get elements put in them and be fit for brewing.
Yeah, so for me, the passion for brewing is like... making things, being in touch with the process. It wasn't all about, you know, pushing buttons, as we said, and having state of the art. Now, we'd be probably happy to sometimes not have to mash like, an animal, you know.
Yeah, 13% stout glass.
So I'm going to ask another question, because we did a rum tasting last week, right? Mm. And rum, very similar to port and similar to kind of the lambic style of beer, lambics don't have a Solero process as such, but it's a blending process that happens, right? Now, you touched on the blending process earlier on, right? But you didn't really go into any detail. Maybe explain to us the blending process that you plan on putting in place. How that ages the beer that you have and how it affects the flavor. And just, I suppose, finally then, because ultimately it's going to take a number of years to get there.
Yeah.
And you know, just maybe explain kind of, as we explain, it's like a pyramid. You've the new stuff at the top, you've the older blend at the bottom, and that's what you're drinking from. What's the benefit of it overall?
Yeah, today you're talking about the kind of cool chip beers that we're making with our first year. We never got as far as blending. Blending won't happen for another 2 years.
Yeah.
I have no experience with the blending just yet, but we know what's coming ahead of us. As long as the three barrels that we have right now kick off with their fermentation and behave themselves. We'll have to do the same thing again, the cold ship beer again next year, and then it'll be 2 years time before we start blending, and 3 years again before we start in 3 year blend. So
I just want to get it right in my own head, right? So you're going to take 3 years worth of beer and blend it together, and is that
you do percentage generally, so you have a higher percentage of the sort of the younger beer, and then a smaller percentage of
Third year is always the smallest percentage. and the second year is kind of a median percentage, and the fresh one is the major part of the beer that's going into.
Yeah.
But we're only at the 1 year stage, so.
By then our palates would have would have refined it. No, I mean, in fairness.
Yeah, take us back on in 4 years' time, and we'll tell you exactly how the 3 year blend went.
I mean, well, it is important, Mike, to
if you keep making the sours the way you're making them, right, there'll be no fear of you, right?
Yeah, and really it's about training your palate to, we talked about wine, we experiment, we taste a lot of pet nat and different natural wines. The boundaries are actually, they're actually quite blurred here between all these processes. And a lot of your people who are here tonight are talking about cider, Brittany cider, etc. So the palate gets strained to what you want to achieve with that 3 year blend, hopefully. And I think by then it's just kind of a trial and error, but I think it's also common sense. We've met a lot of blenders actually along the way when we used to showcase our beer as homebrewers in Amsterdam at a really cool festival there. But obviously there's people doing blending for years and that are expert in this. So
yeah,
I think maybe we still have a lot to learn.
Yeah. I think Tom from Land and Lever is definitely the inspiration I would have been taking in on my journey anyway.
Yeah, and just I suppose I'm going back because I'm kind of fascinated with the process, right? With that blending process, right? And the aging of it, because it's been around for port for quite a long time, right? And we've seen it in the rum that we've been looking at recently as well, right? So by the time it's all done and dusted, I just want to be clear, how many is this going to be a continuous? Every year there's a new one added.
That's the thing, yeah.
So that in 20 years, we could have a 20-year-old blend.
Exactly. Well, no, we'll have a continuity at least in 3 years' time. So in 3 years' time, we'll always have a 3-year blend. But you'll always have the kind of the one-off, the 1 year, the young one, and the 3-year blend all in the same year.
Perfect, yeah.
I suppose they also age quite well then over the years, like Lambics.
We're invested. We filled the place with wood and we brewed a lot to fill a lot of barrels for something that probably won't see the light of day for about 3 years. So.
It's really exciting, right? Because when you think about it, I won't say we're in a recession, right? But we're for the alcohol industry, we're in a bit of a strange place, right?
Of course, yeah.
In that a lot of the macros beer is selling really well. A lot of the more artisan beer is doing okay, but not doing as well because it can't pour on a counter, and pouring draft is kind of where a lot of the breweries would make their money, right? And then you look at yourselves, right, and a few others, and you're investing heavily in
the future
3, 6, 9, however that would be, number of years, right?
And yeah, I think now is the right time to do it, no?
Yeah.
Well, if you're not, I mean, look, it's not like whiskey, right? You know yourself, Mike. At least it's 3 years, or it's not like 9, is it, for Irish whiskey? 9, 8?
No, three. Yeah, but you might decide. Would you decide to leave it some of it a little bit longer than the 3 years?
The plan is to just kind of analyze it and see how it is, and just keep on taking samples and see how it's. Maybe some of it will never see the light of day.
Yeah. Also,
3 years could be ambitious too.
And I think that is probably the risk that you have, right?
It's spontaneous fermentation. It's yeast that never made beer before.
So. I was going to say it's alive. Yeah, it's living. It's not following a rule. It's doing a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, the barrels could be turned into planters. And beer could be down the drain. So.
Yeah. Jesus, please, God.
It's not well and good talking about it now.
Yeah, but maybe I just want to go back right to the Peach Berliner, right? Because I have to say, in terms of feedback, this Peach Berliner has actually gotten quite a lot of feedback, and it's all been exceptionally good, right?
Good.
What gave it the peach? Was there peaches in it, or was it the yeast, or was it?
There was 100 kilos of peach, and peach 100 kilos of peach is very expensive. There's a fruit man that comes up from Cork, and he comes into the Midlands of Galway the odd time. he gives me a text. He says, look, I'm heading up your direction. Is there anything you need? I said, fuck it, I have a beer here that it needs a kind of a little bit of sprucing up. Like, give me, what do you have in Peach? Give me 100 kilos. Like, emptying bags of bags and bags and bags and bags of Peach into that beer. Like, it was a dead.
How much did you do? You just macerate it in, or is this?
No, it came in kind of chunks, thankfully. So we didn't have to go at it with knives and try and get it into the tank or anything. But your man has any amount of fruit down there that comes up every once in a while and sends me a text.
And just, I mean, I suppose obviously it's a very limited run, right? But it's gone well. What's next in terms of fruit related beers?
We don't really plan on having too many fruit related beers. I'm not mad about fruit related beers, to be honest. I'd just rather let the beer kind of speak for itself rather than doing fruit additions to it. I think that sour beer needed fruit addition. So if we put some peach on.
Jesus Christ, Sean, your honesty is way too much. I'm actually going to say, right, we've been speaking a bit, right, over the last couple of weeks, right, and we sat down just for the benefit of the lads, right. We sat down last week and we were just chatting and we were this, you know, as we do, talking about different things, and Carla turned around at once and she goes, look, don't worry about paying us, just pay us whenever, right? And you're kind of going, no, don't ever say that, right? Right, you're too honest.
Yeah, the fruit man never said that when I owed him about 500 for all those peaches.
you're woeful. You're woeful honest in terms of
right, business,
okay, right. We're really enjoying the beers. I'm going to open it up right to kind of questions because, you know, I mean, we could keep talking all day, but like let's see what the madness out there has.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from those Limerick heads. Tell us.
So, go on, who's out there?
Give me time for a week.
Sean.
It's like being back in the pub now. Go on now.
Hey guys, it's Owen here.
Hi Owen, how are you?
Carla, I know you have a love of wine, according to Mike there anyway. I suppose this is something I've tried before, but would you guys maybe try a barley wine in terms of the beer?
It's really interesting style, actually, that we've only tried. I tried it recently quite a bit, but it's something we should experiment with, particularly with wood. I think it aged quite well in wood, like, so fair point. I think Sean has a tough time brewing heavy like high ABV beers because obviously the amount of grains he has to match. But he comes home with the, you know, pain in his back and whatever. But yeah, we should definitely experiment. Is this style you like in particular, or like you've
I'm normally a high ABV drinker, all right.
Sure, the higher the better. But yeah, I've tried Brehan recently. Brehan has a nice kind of barley wine, and then some of the American kind of barley wine and English stuff. But it's obviously, you know, you go towards, we talked about our kind of ethos with yeast and how we're passionate about yeast. Yeah, it's you know, more malty. We talk about barley wine, and if we experiment with barley wine, it's not a style we're sort of so experienced with, but certainly I was saying we tried a few styles there recently.
It's a style that takes time on.
One-off mostly, but yeah.
We might give it a go. I mean, also, we're very close to like our Midlands home brewer club. And there's a few guys who really have done so well with, you know, nice recipe with barley wine. So maybe we could just kind of get some lads to come in and brew together something exciting. Yeah.
The home brewers always have the best recipes, I find. The home brewers are the lads I trust.
So I'm laughing, right? We have a certain Emma Langford, for who some may know, others may not know, and everyone probably knows her at this stage, right? Emma's saying, Emma remembers you from UL. She used to make you coffee in the Scholars.
No, oh my God, that's so. I knew there's going to be somebody who knows. But where is Emma? I don't see her. I could see her now. Jesus, that is. You know, somebody, Emma, you have some memory now.
That's
right. That was me there turning up for coffee. Yeah, Jesus.
You're always giving out about that coffee.
No,
as well.
I love that coffee. Come on. those were the days. Today, really, we were reminiscing about our time in Limerick and just, you know, the crack we used to have. Yeah. Just Emma, fair play. Delighted to see somebody
Have we any other questions from the room?
Emma.
Come on, you're being way too quiet. Wait, John Noel, go on, John. Unmute yourself, John.
Yeah, I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I still got my
You're getting good at this, John.
I've figured out where the buttons are. It only took four times. I'm really enjoying this sour. It's new to me, but it's really nice. My question though is about terroir. I was really interested to hear your comments about that, and I'm especially in relation to yeast. I'm wondering whether it's even possible to exclude the influence of local yeast on any beer. I noticed in America, as you go from west to east, the beer does change character. Like Colorado beers have a distinct character, and I don't think that's entirely down to just the influence of fat tire, you know. So yeah. I'm wondering about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think with the you're talking about IPAs, West Coast IPAs and East Coast IPAs, or
well, I was actually thinking earlier than that, you know, back in the 90s and the early 2000s when Sierra Nevada and Anchor Steam were big on the West Coast, and then Fat Tire and that crowd in the Rocky Mountains, and you had Boston Brewing in Boston. IPAs weren't that big a deal, but the beers had a distinct...
It was an introduction with the English ale yeast as well. I think that's what the hazy foods were using on the East Coast, and they were using that as their secret for a long time. Nobody knew about this. That's where they were adding their extra esters from.
But even with mixed fermentation, I think we spent a bit of time on the West Coast in the US there when we were kind of researching a little bit mixed fermentation. I actually think definitely West Coast has a bolder, say with sours, like, you know, extreme sours, and we came across.
Yeah, some of them are too extreme. Like, you can't go overboard with sourness too. Like,
and then maybe East Coast. There's you know, so many other examples, like Crooked Stave, or even, you know, our friends in Allagash. It's a little bit more, Hill Farmstead. Like, these are, you know, kind of quite good example of mixed fermentation beers. Maybe it's a bit more measured. So. Yeah, you might be right there that there's some sort of a
what part of America are you from?
I lived about five blocks from the Anchor Brewery San Francisco.
That's we flew into San Francisco about 2 years ago looking for some West Coast influence and checking out some of the sour breweries over that side of the world before we opened the brewery.
And I definitely found like some...
We found some serious influence over there.
But like, what we were saying is it was completely different from what we were expecting, say, what we knew from, I mentioned East Coast stuff.
And kind of many and varied styles of sour as well. Some extreme sours. What was that place?
San Luis Obispo.
Yeah,
right. There was a kind of very, very extreme sour, like stuff that you sort of...
Even as a sour drinker, you might say, here, look, this is a little bit too sour.
It's an interesting question, I think.
But just to John's question, right? So you've picked the yeast, you know, and you've added the yeast in, but you know, do external yeasts in the brewery have an influence as well, or is the yeast that you've added the dominant yeast? I suppose it was kind of
for all of the beers at the minute, apart from the Kutchup beer, it's all kind of designed. Basically, and we get our yeast from Bootleg Biology in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
So we get kind of blends of Brettanomyces and Saison yeast strength.
And
apart from all the cashmere and the core range, it was kind of US05 and Saison strains.
And just back to John's questioning, because it's somewhat interesting, right? I wonder though, as you move across areas. Like, and maybe Ireland isn't the best, because we're small, and Ireland is relatively small compared to other countries, right? But as you move across the US, I wonder, are certain yeasts sold in prominence in certain areas because the yeast man has more of it, you know? And is that what maybe is leading to that kind of terroir question that John had?
Yeah, there was some of the yeast labs in the States. I'd say there's only four or five kind of, if you want to call them kind of craft yeast labs, that would have set up as kind of home brewers themselves. Maybe they were home brewers and then they realized it's handier making yeast than it is making beer. But you still kind of need the same equipment. But to grow up the likes of Brettanomyces and wild yeast, like I gave your man in Nashville local yeast from Ballymahan for him to grow up and send back to me as well. Like he has the capacity to do it rather than us doing it.
Yeah.
So did we say that? So our yeast dealer, in fact, is from Nashville, Tennessee. It's really cool. Yeast shop. You can buy their stuff online if any home brewers here.
Yeah, it's cool bootleg, t-shirts as well.
Bootleg biology. This guy started as a microbiologist and he just grew up yeast in his own mini house lab, and then now it's kind of an official, obviously. Yeah,
now he has a business from growing up yeast.
And that's where our yeast come from. So it's also quite expensive. Like that comes into liquid form. And it has a bit of a premium price point. Because where it's coming from and the quantity you have to get. But
pictures on Twitter next week of our fresh cheese land.
Fresh cheese is coming in next
and
week.
Our fresh t-shirt.
And is it just in terms of shipping? Like is it expensive to, well, I don't know expensive to ship, but is it difficult to ship? Because I presume you don't freeze dry it. It comes as liquid. Fresh.
He builds it up, and then as soon as he ships it, I need to be ready to brew and get it straight into a beer. So
there's no custom issue. Obviously, yeast is like kind of enough; it's free enough liquid to ship. But as he just said, he has to be ready to use it. It'd be fresh enough, like it's kind of a fresh enough product like you'd want to.
But I presume environmental factors, like if it got too hot or too cold, it would.
So it's cool. It comes in a cool packaging.
The yeast needs to be cool until I put it into the beer, where it's going to be stressed out to the max. Maybe about 30 degrees Celsius. Destroy it.
it's I think it's cool to say, like, and again, if there's home brewers out there, I mean, home brewer scale is ideal to experiment with wild yeast or the Brettanomyces. So if you have a bit of time on your hand and if you're a bit curious, but
and we actually offered it up to the Midlands Beer Club. I don't know if you're in the Midlands Beer Club, but we said, look, I'm placing an order with Bootleg in Nashville if anybody wants anything. And then I got these orders for t-shirts and 25 orders for different wild yeast strains as well. So there's home brewers out there still who are using these yeast strains as well, and people are passionate about that stuff, so it's good to see that, and I'm more than happy to facilitate that.
And again, I there's a good question there, I think from Pat, it's Pat, about like wild yeast kind of wrangling and capturing wild yeast. Like we've done this quite a bit in local area. We've done it like when we go on holiday in France. Say we were doing winery tour in France, and basically we were running around. We have swabs, and we go like you swab the just the vine. Basically, you just
quick. Your man is coming.
There was a farmer. They were actually trying to. I don't know. I think they were pruning or whatever they were doing. Well, basically, we just swab a lot of.
Yeah, we were going in with our delicate fucking cotton buds, trying to take the yeast off the.
Sometimes it works, and I think this particular experience didn't work. But obviously, our local yeast in just the forest, it's called Newcastle Forest, that worked. And if anyone wants a bit of advice, like just ping us on Instagram and say, like, Sean, how do you go? Like, really, we'd be happy to help.
I have a blog post as well where I tell you how to harvest your own wild yeast.
I think this is a bit of a cool sorcery experiment,
There's a question that came in, and we kind of missed it from Pat O'Loughlin. What's the most beer that you've brewed, right? And I think the reason he's asking that is because you're into kind of the saisons and the.
What was the question again?
What's the most boring beer that you've brewed? The
most boring one.
Yeah.
It's probably the IVA, isn't it? I know it's only boring to brew because I had to brew so much of it and people keep on buying it, so it's, you know, you envisage yourself as being a kind of a idealistic one-off brew each and every time, and it's always going to sell out, but you kind of need the IP in the background. It's not boring to brew, but it is our most boring to brew.
And just it's something that we sometimes ask, right, and what's the biggest brewing mistake you've made, either as a home brewer or as a commercial?
Yeah, I can tell you, I know exactly off the top of my head. I fucking remember it. I was doing my first ever kettle sour in the house, and I was at work at the time as well. So I said, in the morning, I'd start this kettle sour on. I'll leave it in the kettle, in the kitchen. Okay, it's at a steady 40 degrees. I'll head off to work. I'll come back at lunchtime and then I'll check on it. If it drops a few degrees, I'll warm it up a little bit because it's in the kettle. So I came home at lunchtime. I had the Sambo turned back on the kettle because it dropped about 10 degrees. So I tried to warm it up. So I turned on the kettle and finished the Sambo and headed off back to work. And therein lies the problem. I came back from work. The walls were covered in fucking dripping, sweating mess.
The paint.
There was about that much of 20 liters left in a 20 liter kettle. I'm cook a chance to kind of battle it or something.
So is that why you hate kettle sours?
That's a strong part of why I hate kettle sours.
So yeah, look, I mean, in terms of counseling, right? Like this would cost you maybe 30 sessions, you know, at 100 euros a session.
To let it all out here now.
Okay. Anyone else got any burning issues or questions they want to ask?
Unique Pat's question there, you see.
Yes, yeah.
You wanted to ask the worst experiment.
Anyone out there with a question? No? Actually, have we anyone on from the Midlands Homebrew Club? Because I know there was a few
talks. Sure, no. I don't recognize any names, but
No. They maybe didn't join in the end.
Not loyal. The lads are not following us.
No, they were telling you they were going to join. Okay. Do you see this question?
There, you see it, Dan Shaw.
What is your dream beer to brew?
I brewed it last week. The Cold Ship beer.
Good man.
Now, it's been kind of 2 years in the making, and we've been 2 years brewing other styles. And last week, we finally got to fill the Cold Ship and put the thing in barrels. So that is my dream beer.
Yeah, it was kind of a special moment for us because, you know, it was just really kind of idyllic setting. It was nighttime, it was cold, you know, the steam was going everywhere. And yeah, we were very proud of it. And this is going to be a quintessentially Ballymahan beer, as we talked about terroir, and no thing to say. So,
how do you name the beer? What's like, is there a naming convention, or is there a, how do you come up with the names?
It's probably the hardest part between naming and designing labels.
I'm not a big fan of naming beers because it's just a never ending process, but often it comes kind of organically with, you know, you just give it a think and what it means to you. No, there's a nice kind of,
yeah, but the finished product, when you start tasting it, you're like, yeah, maybe we should aim this one a little bit more sunshine wise and give it a kind of a brighter feel, and then other times it needs to go a little bit darker and sinister.
Okay, so John McCarthy is asking, yeah, what's your favorite beer that you're drinking at the moment in Ireland, obviously outside of your own.
Irish beer.
Irish beer, yeah.
Yeah, like our local lads, same as their Brown Hill is good, so we always have a few of them in the fridge. And we also, yeah, the Rye River, the Mary's Pale Ale and stuff like that we have.
And internationally then, what are you drinking? What are you loving at the moment internationally?
It's on DuPont, is always in the fridge too.
Belgian style predominantly, yeah. But... I'm working towards my Cicerone kind of certification, so a lot of English style at the minute.
While meeting online has benefits in the current pandemic, unfortunately, the last 10 minutes of the recording was not captured. We'd like to thank Sean and Carla from White Street Brewing for joining us, for giving us some fantastic beer to sell to our customers, and for being good crack on the evening. As always, we'd like to thank our customers. Without our customers, we wouldn't exist. Without customers buying beer, White Street wouldn't exist. So again, thank you very much, good night, and until next time.